Welcome to Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name's Fraser Spears. This week's show continues where Bradley and I left off last week talking about Apple Configurator. If you missed last week's show, you can catch up at outofschool.net. Now, on with the show. Bradley, your advice is to use one machine per school.
It is, and that is what we do. And I believe if you will talk to your Apple SE, they will tell you to not do that. I know there were some consultants floating around that had recommended like one computer per cart in a cart-based deployment. And I just don't think – I think that's overkill, and I think it can lead to confusion about, how, I guess, what you actually own, especially depending on what app model you do. So – my advice is one machine per school. Like, and if you do, like, if you know you're a, like your school, you have kind of a lower, a middle, and an upper school, you might do three machines. But like, if you're a, you know, if your school is K through five, like ours, you know, it's overkill to do a configurator machine for kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, and fourth grade. You know, go back to that whole kind of keep it simple model. Knowing that, again, that you can create lists and kind of group devices in Configurator, and you can have multiple configuration profiles.
Absolutely. I think the key thing to understand is that each instance of Configurator is a silo unto itself, and it's fine to separate your use of Configurator between different machines, as long as you are absolutely certain that things will never cross over that boundary. So, I mean, for example, if you had a school where you had one building in town A and another building in town B, I would be saying one machine per town, right? Because all the devices on that site are never going to come to this site and vice versa. But for us and for most schools, I'm sure that, classes are not always perfectly even sizes. So, you know, 10 kids come up one year, 20 kids come the next year, 18 come the year after that, and the numbers go up and down. And if you think about your licenses from VPP as like a pool of licenses, you're one big pool, and MD can pull from that pool. Whereas if you've fragmented it so much that you've got 18 licenses over there and 21 over here and 17 over there because that's what you needed this year, and then next year comes along, and you've got too many in one machine and not enough in another machine, you're going to have to buy new ones for that other machine because you can't extract the licenses from machine A to put them into machine B for redeployment next year. So I think that's another good reason for keeping it as simple as possible. Yeah, so one machine per school. And the other thing you're really big on, Bradley, and you're right on this, is backing up Configurator.
Yeah, and this is really from experience. You know, kind of like I've been using this app since day one, and there was an update last fall that it wasn't a bad update, just something on my computer didn't like it. I think I just upgraded this machine to Mountain Lion or there was something, and Configurator refused to launch. And called support and basically said, look, you're just going to need to restore the machine. So thankfully, I had a Time Machine backup from the day before, restored the machine, everything worked fine. So again, this goes back to the simplicity. It's a lot easier to make sure you've got one machine backed up than if you have, like, say, five on your campus that you're trying to back up. So depending on how much money you have in apps and in, you know, configuration, of course, you can export the configuration profiles separately, and you might even rotate two Time Machine drives per computer, and maybe even one Time Machine and one, you know, like a clone with Super Duper or Carbon Copy Cloner, and maybe even rotate one of those off-site, because you've got that database holds your app licenses, so that is like money in there. So you just want to take care of that.
Yeah, there's an actual dollar value you can put on that file.
And again,
which may be thousands of dollars.
Yeah, especially if you think about it 5 years from now, how much will you have invested in applications? And so it's just one of those things. It's really, really easy to back up. So just use Time Machine, at least back it up once, if not maybe rotate one to an offsite location, you know, maybe take one home on the weekends and rotate them. It's just so easy to do that. You know, pre-Leopard, backing up on the Mac was very difficult. It is terribly easy to back up a Mac computer. Of course, most people listening to this show probably are shaking their heads, absolutely agree. They're the ones preaching this on their campus. But don't forget about your Apple Configurator machine.
Yep. Yeah, because sometimes with Apple Configurator, people can think, well, I only need a little Mac Mini for that, so that, you know, it's not a big box. It's not an X server or a Mac Pro or something. So it can sometimes get forgotten about. Okay, so I think for the rest of this show and however many other shows this goes on to be, the best thing to do would be to listen to this show while looking at Apple Configurator, because what I plan to do here is just sort of walk through the parts of Configurator and try and explain both the theory, which is kind of where I'm at the moment with thinking about it, and Bradley, perhaps you maybe have more practical steps that you can add into this. In terms of what each part of Configurator does. Now, we've already talked about the preferences, but if you're looking at Configurator, it's basically broken into three sections. There's three big buttons across the toolbar. There's Prepare, there's Supervise, and there's Assign. So let's take them each in turn. Does that seem like a good way to go?
Yeah, that sounds like a great plan to me.
Yeah, so the theory of each section, like what you would do with them, is also determined by your deployment model, okay? So what these sections can do, and there is some overlap, and this is what confuses a lot of people when they start with Apple Configurator, is why can I do the same thing in Supervise that I can do in Prepare? Why wouldn't I just do it all here or just do it all there? So we'll try and pick apart some of that. The theory of the Prepare tab is that tab is for the things you'll do just once to a device, okay? And how much you do there does depend on your deployment model. So if you're doing a fully personal model, the Prepare tab is where all your action happens, right? Because what you're going to do is you're taking the device out of the box, you're putting on presumably the latest iOS, because the devices might have shipped with an older iOS. You're putting on maybe some configuration profiles, and then you're basically doing nothing else. You're giving that device away to the person who's using it. So you'll update the OS, you'll supervise the device, and you'll install configuration profiles at that point in a personal model. You'll do most of your work in Prepare, and then you probably won't use Supervise and Assign in a fully personal model. If you're doing a layered model, you'll do the same kind of things as you would in the personal model, but you can also install your institutional apps at this point. Okay, so you can basically put on a full load of the apps that you want, your configuration profiles, you can supervise your device, set its name, and you could basically have the bulk of your work done the first time you touch that device. Because after that point, you're then going to hand that device out, and the individual student's going to layer on their stuff on top of that. Because in a layered model, you're really not expecting to see the device back in Configurator on a regular basis. You're going to see it maybe once a month, maybe once every 6 months, just to update the institutional apps, whereas the student's going to manage most of it for most of the time themselves. But if you're doing a fully institutional model, you'll do the basics in Prepare. But when you're doing a fully institutional model, you as the configurator guru, if you like, are going to spend most of your time with institutional devices in the Supervise tab, because you're going to tweak stuff in there. You know, this week I want another app on, or I need this configuration profile changed, or I need a new restriction on person A's iPad or whatever. So most of that work's actually done over in Supervise. For an institutional model, the Prepare tab really just gets you up and running with supervision, latest OS installation, and possibly your initial configuration profiles. So that's the theory of that tab for those three models. Bradley, do you want to talk us through all the moving parts of Prepare?
So one of the things that I really like about the Prepare tab in our type deployment is the ability to number the iPads sequentially. So that makes it really easy if you're trying to keep up with various information about the iPad. So if you like to record the MAC address and things like that, And if you're using, you know, which you should be, an enterprise wireless network, that will actually show up as the kind of the device name. And so if a teacher says, hey, we're having issues with device number 3, you can, you know, say log into your wireless network, see what's going on, look at the MAC address, run a client monitor if you're using Aerohive's network or whatever other troubleshooting you have on, you know, your wireless network. And so it just kind of identifies it specifically. And you could even do this with a different type model. So let's say one where it was basically the personal model or the layered model. It's just a good way to kind of identify device to device, because even if the student basically is running the iPad themselves and you're really not doing much to it other than the initial setup, it's still handy to know what device is what on the network. So if you said, all right, you know, little Johnny's got iPad 1, we know what's going on there. And, you know, it's just, again, nice to have that kind of information. You can also set the version of iOS. So let's say, Fraser, you bought your iPads today, as we have. I've got a lot of iPads sitting in boxes behind me that need to be imaged. Well, let's say that iOS 7 rolls out in, let's say, August 1st, and you think we want to start the school with iOS 7. Apple Configurator makes it very easy to mass update the software through it. And so this is a big change from the iTunes days where you could only install one at a time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was fun. I bet that had to drive you nuts when, like, iOS 5.1.4 came out. You know, so what do you even do?
The absolute worst one ever was the transition from iOS 4.3 to iOS 5, because it was so slow and iTunes could only do one device at a time. Now, iTunes can sync a lot of devices concurrently, but it can only update the OS on one. And the beauty of Configurator, and this was the sort of revelation of it at the start, apart from the VPP codes, but it was also the first device, or the first software rather, that could parallelize the update of iOS on multiple devices at once. So that's really important thing to think about there. And that's really a kind of, you know, first day out of the box sort of thing.
Well, because especially like if you're like us, I've been sitting on some iPads for a month and a half. Well, I know we're at least probably two versions behind. And, you know, if iOS 7 does roll out before school starts by some reason, it's nice to be able to do that. I've found that it's even faster than doing over-the-air updates just because it's over a cable. So that's in the prepare screen as well. That, again, is a much very nice feature. The restore function is also nice. So let's say you kind of get your, you know, master backup. Like this is like, you know, day one, this is what every iPad I want to do. You can make a backup of that through Configurator, then restore everyone to that. Now, if I'm thinking back to last summer, that also allows you to bypass the welcome to your iPad screen. Am I right?
Yeah, so this is a sort of classic, it's been a hack for iOS deployers for years and years. Is what you'll do is you'll basically take one device, go through the setup screens, set it up the way you want it, put the apps in the folders, put them all in the right way, and then we used to do this in iTunes, you can now do it more formally in Configurator. You would take a backup of that device, and then every time you can now configure a new iPad, you would say, instead of saying set up as a new iPad, you would say restore from backup of Golden Master iPad. And Configurator just basically formalizes that procedure and lets you do it. Now, the model you want to use this for is you want to use this for an institutional model device. You don't want to use it for either a layered model device or a personal model device. Because in layered and personal, you want to hand out the iPad with the iOS setup assistant showing so that the student can work through that, sign in with their own Apple ID, create one if they need to, turn on iCloud, turn on Find My iPad, and then start using the device. That works, and the beauty of Configurator is that you can actually insert apps and configuration profiles underneath the setup assistant, so that the experience is that in a layered model, you would, as a student, you would come in, you would go through the iOS setup assistant, and when you're finished, oh look, there's 20 apps that are already on my iPad. Whereas in a personal model, you would see no additional apps and you would just go ahead and download them or have them pushed to you through MDM. So the master backup thing is a real institutional model trick that people have been sort of hacking up for years in iTunes, and now it's something you can do in Configurator.
Do you want to kind of run through as well kind of the various things you can do inside of the profiles here?
Yeah, well, basically just to say that at this point, you can put profiles on the device. Now, you can have, like we said already, you can have multiple profiles, and I think what we will do is we'll keep the discussion of what might go in those profiles for another show, but things you might want to put on here, regardless of your model, are things like a Wi-Fi profile or a passcode profile. Anything that's related to security, and also even in like in a personal model, for example, one of the two things we're doing is we're turning off 17-plus rated applications, and we're also turning off downloading movies and TV shows from iTunes, and that's partly just to save space on the device. But I never want those profiles to come off the device. So obviously with Configurator, like iPhone Configuration Utility back in the day, this is the only way that you can put profiles on the device that can never be removed or not removed without authorization. Because if you do those through an MDM server, if the student unenrolls from MDM, that will also remove all the profiles that came through MDM. So if you say, oh, no 17-plus applications, push that out to everybody through MDM, and the student unenrolls from MDM at 3 o'clock on a Friday, they've got carte blanche to download 17-plus applications all weekend and play with them. And then if you have this capability, they could re-enroll themselves on Monday morning and you wouldn't know the difference. So if security critical stuff, I think you still want to put them on through Configurator in the Prepare tab at the start. We'll talk more about profiles later on.
Yeah, that is really, I mean, Apple did a nice job here, and there's a lot of nice options you can do, and they make it pretty easy to configure. I mean, again, some of the things you can do are web clips and subscribe calendars, and so I could see those being useful in all types of deployments.
Yeah. So the things like calendar subscriptions and web clips, you don't really mind if somebody doesn't have them, because, you know, if they unenroll from MDM, they lose their web clips. It's not the end of the world, and you haven't breached any kind of security system that you might have. But if somebody unenrolls from MDM and they lose their App Store configuration ratings, for example, then that's more of a problem. So that's a walk through the Prepare tab. The thing to understand about Prepare and most of the operation of Configurator is that you can sort of set the screen up, hit go, and Configurator will just sit there waiting for the connection of additional iPads, and it will just blow them away and put on whatever you said, right? So once, imagine you're trying to process a pallet of new iPads, you set this up at the start of your day, take you 20 minutes or something, and then the entire rest of your day is just unwrapping and plugging in iPads all day. You don't have to touch Configurator again, particularly if you're supervising and you want to install profiles. You don't have to touch every screen, because in supervision mode, profiles are installed silently without user interaction on the device.
They do a nice job of, you know, kind of dings when it's done. So what I do, because I don't love to buy those expensive carts that Brettford sells, because they are expensive. They're very nice, but they're expensive. So I have a 12-port powered USB hub, but I only do 6 at a time. So I kind of felt like that was the sweet spot. So that's what I do. So if you're looking, I think I got it on Amazon. Again, it was like a 12-port hub, and I just used 6 of them. But you just want to make sure whatever you use is powered as well.
Yeah.
Because the iPad can draw its power.
Indeed. So let's dig into Supervise tab. And Supervise tab is kind of where the action happens for certain other models. So the theory is that the Supervise tab is where you would do your day-to-day management of iOS devices. Now, in some deployment models, you basically don't have any day-to-day management of the iOS device because the students are doing that themselves. That's a personal model. But if you're a layered model administrator or an institutional model administrator, you're going to spend most of your quality time throughout the year in the Supervise tab. And basically, the thing that people miss about the Supervise tab is that it works offline. People who've used iPhone Configuration Utility will know that that program, and Configurator does the same, it would remember every iPad that had been connected to it. So you could go in and look at the serial numbers, the IMEI numbers, the UDID numbers, all the configuration profiles, a list of apps that were on the device, even if you didn't have the device connected, unlike iTunes where you can't see that information. Configurator does the same thing. So what you can do is in the Supervise tab, you can make your changes to these settings, hit apply, even if the iPads aren't in the room. And then the next time the iPads come back, you plug them in, configurator recognizes that device, connects it with the configuration you've set up for it, and it will apply that new configuration to the device, which is really nice because it means you don't have to take the devices out of service for even longer than you would have to have them all sit there while you twiddle a thing and then plug them all in. So that's the kind of theory of the supervised tab. You mentioned, Bradley, that you can make groups of devices in supervise.
Yes, you can. So, like on the left, if you're following along under supervised devices, you'll see all devices, USB connected, and then at the bottom there's a plus. You click that, and you can make an untitled device group. So, like, you could do a lower school, you know, group. And so then you could kind of work with those independently. It makes it easy to get the right apps on, you know, if you're adding an app and you only need it on the lower school group, yep. It makes it easy to do that. I think they really thought the interface on Supervise looks very simple, but you can tell they put a lot of work into how it works. The fact that, you know, the all devices, and it only shows the USB devices. So, and then it's also telling that the button says refresh and not, you know, prepare. And so, it works well. That's the mode I live in day to day. And so I can, you know, make changes, hit refresh, and, you know, a day later can plug up iPads and it will just, you know, kind of go off to the races. So, yep. You know, this is also where you will want to update apps in supervised mode. So should I talk about that at this point?
Let me just finish one thought about the groups. The thing that I think confuses people about the supervised tab is that typically you're learning Apple Configurator with only one iPad in your hands. And it all seems a bit weird when you've only got one iPad. But try and imagine you've got 300 iPads in this system. And you've got groups on the left, you know, primary 1, primary 2, primary 3, class groups or whatever. And then you click on one of them, you'll see 25 iPads in that group, and you'll also see an all devices section at the top of each group. So you go into a group, you see all devices, and you can apply changes to all devices, or you can select one individual device and apply changes just to that device. A good example of that might be if one particular student needs to have their camera turned off for a while. You go into primary 3, you go into child X, and you just apply to their iPad only the camera disablement profile. And that's the way that you can work with that system. Try and imagine it with 300 iPads in it, not just one. I've been practicing this week with four spare iPad 1s that we've got, and plugging them all in at once and starting to see how the interface starts to make a lot more sense. The more iPads you have connected at one time, you can start to work with them. It's really helpful.
It's a fast little program. And applying these changes, it's in the way the updates work, like kind of like the less changes you're making, the faster it goes.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you've still got to push, you know, a 50 megabyte iOS app across the wire to devices.
Right.
So you're limited by that. But, you know, for example, changing a configuration profile on 25 iPads in one go is really pretty quick.
Okay, so let's take a quick moment and thank the sponsor for this week's show, Teacher's Pet. So Teacher's Pet is a great iPhone app. It's designed specifically for teachers to quickly capture notes, reminders, and to-dos. So, you know, Fraser, I love OmniFocus, but I'm also not a teacher. You know, I kind of work in, you know, my day-to-day is kind of like a business environment. I'm you know, doing IT things. But teachers are dealing with students. They're dealing with homework. They're dealing with papers sent home. They're dealing with parent emails. So Teacher's Pet is a to-do app that's, you know, really more than a to-do app. It's an app to help them manage their classroom day-to-day. So one of the keys is tracking and acting on student behavior consistently and in a timely manner. By knowing who you're teaching and when your classes are, Teacher's Pet can help you achieve this. You start by entering your class, your schedule, and student information. While you're in the class, tap a new item button, and the app knows which student list to bring up. Choose the students, then set a reminder for the next class in just one tap. Never forget to follow up on missed homework again. Your students won't like it, but you'll be more on top of things. So Teacher's Pet is available for $2.99 on the App Store. And if you're buying through the volume purchase program in bulk, it's only $1.49 per license. So a great thing to add to your summer app list for your deploying on your teachers' iPads in the fall. So Teacher's Pet in the iOS App Store.
So, yeah, tell us about Updates Bradley. What's the procedure there?
So my blog probably gets more hits off of my article on this than any article on an ongoing basis about the easiest way to update, because it's not intuitive, I guess, and you don't just see it and say, oh, that makes sense how you do it. There's no update app button in the in Configurator. So a lot of people think, well, let's just open them on the device or update them on the device. Well, yeah. The problem, depending on your obviously in the supervised mode, that the students, you don't want them to have your Apple ID username and password. Because even though these are if they're volume purchased apps, they are still ultimately tied to a username and passcode within iTunes, just like our regular Apple IDs. So you don't want them to have that. So the way to do that is to open up iTunes, because again, those apps are still in iTunes because you had to download at least one of them. So you'll go into iTunes, update apps just like you normally would for your personal, iPhone or iPad, let them download, close iTunes. It's always important to remember just to close iTunes when you're working in Apple Configurator. Then restart Apple Configurator. Go into the apps section. You'll see all of your apps listed there. Click the plus button, like you're going to add apps. And if it doesn't go there automatically, navigate to your mobile applications folder. And now, depending on the amount of apps you have, let's say you just had two apps that got updated, think, oh, I'll just go find those. And you just click on those, and it will say, do you want to overwrite application A version 1.6 with application A 2.0? You would say yes. But if you haven't done this in a while, and you have 30 applications that have updated, that are varied amongst your 100 applications, it's going to be difficult to know which ones they are, unless you hit the modified button to sort by basically modified date. And so it should show you hey, these 30 applications were modified today. So those are 30 applications you'll update. You'll have to accept the updates kind of individually. Update this application to this version. Okay. But then that's basically done. You refresh them again. It'll push those applications out, and you're good to go. Again, depending on if you've got 10 of those that were, 300 megs apiece, it's going to take a while. And it's important to leave them on there until they're done.
Yeah, every time that iWork team sneezes, it's going to take you a while to get through all those. Or GarageBand. It's always a horror when GarageBand gets updated to 500 megs.
It's like, no, we don't. Yeah, it's like, but
I was going to say just, Bradley, that's one of the beauties of Configurator is that if that happens, you can plan when people get a new copy of GarageBand, right? It doesn't have to be I'm syncing these just to get a backup. This happens to us all the time. I want to make sure I've got a backup this week. Plug in the device. Oh no, there's a new GarageBand. That's that device going to be sitting there for 40 minutes while this ancient iMac wheezes over the cable. The thing I like about Configurator is that it's a very kind of planned and managed way to get these new updates out to devices.
Yeah, it works well. I think this process could be improved. I would love to see. Mm-hmm. There's just a update my apps button. But again, going back to it's on top of the iTunes and Apple ID ecosystem. That's just the way it works. And I talked to my Apple systems engineer, and he confirmed that's their recommended way as well. Because I just don't know, especially even if you are okay with your students having the school Apple ID and passcode, again, going back to something like GarageBand that is a huge file, there's just no reason to download that 50 times when you can download it once and then push it out over USB.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question, Bradley. Have you ever tried to downgrade an application through this method?
I have not, but I don't see why it wouldn't work, though. I mean, because you're essentially just overwriting the file, so I don't see a reason why it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't say, do you want to, when you're importing the app, it doesn't say, do you want to upgrade this application? It says, do you want to replace?
Replace.
And so I would think I would think that you would be able to.
Well, that's another reason for keeping a Time Machine backup of your Mac. is, you know, you'll have a Time Machine version, Time Machine backup of all of your versions of your mobile applications folder. So if you find that, you know, Pages 2.0, is, you deploy it a little bit and then you realize that there's some bugs in it we want to roll back, you would at least have the previous binary file in your backup somewhere that you could bring back in, assuming Configurator lets you do that, which I haven't checked and you haven't tried. So we'll try and follow up on that. So that's the theory of the supervised tab. It's where most people are going to live most of the time. And particularly in one-to-one situations where you've got the same number of iPads as you've got users, you don't need to go into this third tab that we're going to talk about, which is the Assign tab. Do you use the Assign tab, Bradley?
I don't.
No.
I just haven't felt the need. I'm just very much of the model, like, kind of keep it simple because just haven't needed it. No.
Okay. So the Assign tab is weird, right? It appears to offer something that people think isn't possible with iOS and sort of is in Configurator, which is a check-in and check-out model. So this is one of the a thing in Configurator where if you're doing a very specific thing, this is the bit to do. But most people aren't necessarily doing this. And this is, if you imagine a whole bunch of iPads in a library, let's say, and you want to go and actually, like a book, check one out, right? What this section of Configurator lets you do is it lets you assign users. So in Assign, you can create users like you would create devices and device groups in the Supervised tab. And then you can make users. And then you can check out specific devices to specific users. And what that means is that the device will be prepared from its backup. And then the user's data and settings will be applied to that device, restored to it, basically. And then the user can take the device away, work on it, and when the device is checked back in, a whole device backup is made into Configurator, and then the device is reset to its virgin state. And then the next time the people comes along, it can be a different device, different physical device. You can say, check that device out to the same people. All their backup is restored onto the device. They go away and do some work on it, and then they check it back in, and all of their data is backed up into Configurator again. This is fine until you start making a lot of data, right? And the way it's kind of been described is if check-in and check-out takes too long, you should probably be looking at some kind of one-to-one model, because kids are making so much data that you can't do that. But it's essentially, if you watch an iPad while it's being checked in and checked out, it looks exactly like being backed up and restored in iTunes. You see restore in progress on the iPad and all of that kind of stuff. And it does take about the same amount of time. So it's not something to be entered into lightly, I think. You want to make sure that that's going to scale up as far as you want to go, because I suspect that if you did that on a regular basis, you would sort of quickly overwhelm Configurator and you would end up spending hours doing backups and check-ins and check-outs, and that would end up being very time expensive. So I haven't really talked to very many people who use Configurator and also use Assign. I think most people tend not to use it, and I certainly don't plan to use it either.
That's just a lot of data to move around. I mean, you'd have to, as you said, it would have to be a specific use case. Like, for this month, this class is going to have iPads the entire month, and then next month, this class is going to have the iPads.
Yeah, but see, I think even if you're doing it on a month by month basis, you could do a lot of damage in a month in terms of making a lot of data, shooting camera data and stuff, and then you're sucking in gigs and gigs of video data when you do the turnover. I think even in that situation, you would be better off just trying to wipe and re-prepare and reinstall the apps and sort of freshen them up again from a backup through Configurator than try to check in and check out and preserve the underlying configuration. You'd probably be quicker to blow the device away and set up from scratch again. I think that's probably, in terms of speed, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Of course, the thing is, with check-in and check-out, it preserves the user's data set over time. So if you're doing a very frequent but short-term checkout, say, for example, getting it for an hour in the library to use some iBooks author stuff and then checking it back in, then, yeah, in that situation, I think that's where check-in, check-out might have a role. So a sign is not so much... not so commonly used, but it enables one or two very specific use cases. But for most of the things we've talked about, personal, layered, and institutional, you can get by pretty much fine with prepare and supervise in most cases. Okay. Are we getting through this? What else are we going to talk about?
Let's see. I'm looking through the notes here. We've covered a lot of this.
Yeah.
So let's talk about troubleshooting.
Okay.
So Apple nailed this part of it. They, you know, there are two kind of groups at Apple that do support. You've got Apple Care, and then you've got Apple Enterprise support. And typically, like, you cannot call Apple Enterprise support without a Enterprise support agreement. Like, your general, you know, I bought a computer and I can't figure out how to make it work phone call goes to Apple Care, even if you are an institution. So Apple knew, and I'm thankful they did, that these problems would be tricky, and they are not like any other problem that you're going to deal with on a Mac. So they decided to let Apple Enterprise Support be the contact for Apple Configurator. So if you're having a kind of a specific issue with Apple Configurator, my first piece of advice would be to contact your local systems engineer. And if you don't have one, let's put it this way. In America, we've got a local systems engineer that kind of covers our state. Does that how that works in your country?
No. There are some systems engineers in Europe. I don't know how many there are. I know who mine is, but then I sometimes get phone calls from Apple that other people don't get. So there are systems engineers in the UK. There is no phone number that you can call to talk to them, as far as I know. But if your Apple business people, your Apple regional education manager, as we would call them in the UK, or your business development manager, if you have this kind of technical level thing, they can put you in touch with these people. But as my understanding is that they tend to help what you might call major accounts. So big companies moving over to Mac or iPad or something like that, they tend to be more involved with that. And the rest would be phone support, I think.
So in an environment where you've got someone to contact, I would contact them first. And just so that way they can just, you've gone through the proper channels. So then you'll call Apple Enterprise Support. And again, the phone number is going to vary from country to country. Mm-hmm. Now, the caveat is at least one of the devices you're using, either an iOS or the Mac, has to be in warranty. So it would be helpful if your iOS is getting a little old and you don't have Apple Care, to make sure your Apple Configurator machine is under warranty, that you will have to have one of those under warranty. Now, in my experience, they've done remote support pretty quick, where they send you to a specialized URL, you download a little agent, and they do remote support. And that, I love that. As an IT person, when I'm having an issue, the last thing I want to do is describe the issue. I want them to just see it.
Yeah. Do you remember the days when you couldn't do that?
Yeah. I think, you know, users are still blown away when, because you can't do that on an iPad deployment, but on a Mac deployment, you know, you pull up remote desktop, jump in, fix it, and save me from having to walk downstairs. So I had a user last week that she called me and said, "Hey, my sound is broken, and I'm hitting the volume up button, but it's not working. I don't have any sound in my browser." So she was on YouTube, and the YouTube has its own specific volume in the player, and that was down. So logged in to her machine, pulled that up, and without her even knowing it, it was fine. It was playing. So
superpowers.
Yeah, magic. So that is they do a good job here, and I've been very, very, very helpful, or very impressed with how helpful they are. So now that's Apple Configurator issues. If you have specific issues to the volume purchase program, they do not handle that. But you still need to call in first and get a case created.
Okay.
So, let's say you've got, like, I had an issue earlier this year where it said some codes were invalid. So you'll want to call in to Apple Enterprise Support. they will, you know, create you a case. They'll investigate and say, look, these codes are jacked up for whatever reason. We don't really know why. Again, it's all built on top of iTunes. So once it's marked as redeemed for some unknown reason, it's marked as redeemed. Now, Apple is very, very good about assisting you with these issues. They will have you email a specific email address that I will not share on the show, and you will explain the case number and the situation, and they will probably send you a spreadsheet back with the codes, with new codes, is how you know it's been with me. And again, it's it feels very weird to work with Apple, like over email and things like that. Mm-hmm. But they are, in my experience, have been generally very, very helpful and willing to, they're not looking to get rich on app sales. Like, they're looking to make sure your deployments go well. And so, yeah. Now, I'll tell you, one of the things that I do just to save time is when I'm buying apps, if I need 15, I will often buy 16 or 17, as long as it's not like a $50 app. If it's a $2 application that's getting for, you know, a dollar through the volume purchase program, I might buy a couple extras just in case something goes wrong. And what I'll do while I'm waiting on Apple to help me out, and because you still need to deploy, you know, iPads, I'll just, mm-hmm. you know, I have those extras, and so I just have maybe one or two floating, and so, you know, maybe if I bought 17 but need 15, but I had problems with two of them, I'll use my two spares to get it deployed, and when Apple, you know, gives me new codes, I just, you know, kind of repeat the process over again. You know, again, you may spend an extra, I don't know, $50 here and there, I don't know, but it's just in it's like if you were having an issue with your app licenses and it was going to like hinder you your deployment, you'd pay $50 to have it fixed immediately.
Yeah.
And so why not just let's, you know, again, you shouldn't have to do that. But again, you know, to go back to, Apple had to build a system on top of another system, a consumer-based system, to work mm-hmm. in education and the business. So like let's just kind of like think about it. We're coming alongside Apple and like let's try to see it from their point of view. Things will happen. And they generally do a good job of helping people out.
Yeah. And I think to kind of be realistic about this for a minute, there is no way that the App Store mechanism, volume purchase codes, Apple ID locking, all of that kind of stuff, none of that is going away except through things like Configurator, right? There's never going to be a situation where it's like Microsoft where you log into like your special app store and then you download your copy of all the things that don't have any licensing on them, and that's never going to happen. So whatever does happen in the future, I'm sure will be built upon the existing system, right? There's never going to be an alternate side door that IT can come in and get trivially distributable, unlocked, DRM-free copies of things that are on the app store. That's just not going to happen. So we have to make our peace with this world, and it's taken some of us some time. It certainly took me some time in the beginning, but this is the way it's going to be, right? And the question is, how do you not only arrange your Apple Configurator deployment, but also how do you perhaps reorganize some parts of your organization such that you can align with this if this is what you want to do? And maybe that's too hard a job for you, right? Maybe you simply cannot get your school, college, whatever, to change their policies in such a way that you can do this. And then I'm afraid that's, you know, probably not going to be the platform for you. And Apple, if Apple loses enough big accounts because of that, then I'm sure things will change. But I'm pretty sure that's not the story right now. So make your peace with Configurator and codes.
Well, it's just
what we're saying.
Well, if you just think about it, like, I don't know, let's say someone that's coming out of college now and is going into IT, and they sit down and this is like the environment they, you know, doing iPad deployments. This is the only environment they will know. You know, they won't mm-hmm. know, they won't remember the days of like group policy and things like that, where you had complete control and profiles roam from machine to machine and things like that. And so I think it'll be one of those situations where like a lot of our frustration with this, like we will just die out. Like people like me yeah. and you that remember the old days when you had that kind mm-hmm. of control, like we just will die.
Well, I mean, guys coming out of college right now with IT degrees or IT qualifications, they don't even remember a world where people shared computers. You know, their entire life has been, you know, everybody's got their computer. You know, it's not like they were brought up in households where there was just one computer, you know. And another 5 years, another 10 years, that's going to be the majority of the young Turks in your organization, so.
And I found yeah. it helpful to, you know, if our teachers complain about something like, you know, hey, I wish the iPads could do this, or, you know, I wish we could control that. I really tried to do my best to educate them that, look, this is, you know, Apple sees the user as king here, and, you know, we just have to educate our students on best practices. You know, you can't always fix societal or behavioral issues through control. Sometimes you just have to educate.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I look at this, you know, having 3 years under my belt with these uncontrollable iPads, is that your need for control comes and goes depending on who's in your class, right? Some years you'll get a class where you do need quite a lot of control. And other years, it'll be totally fine to let them go. And also, as technology evolves, and if you want to think about it in these terms, like the threat environment changes, you know, if new services come out, think Google Glass comes out and gets a bit creepy, Vine's there, you know, there's all these new things, and your need for control evolves as the ecosystem you work in and the platform you're on both evolve. So sometimes things will come out that you do need to control. Like, I can imagine in a lot of big schools, controlling iMessage might be a really important thing. You know, as I started to move into doing digital exams on the iPad, for example, which was something I didn't do in the first year, having the ability to lock out Wi-Fi settings would be really powerful. I mean, I've dealt with that other ways now because I've done it through Aerohive. But, you know, as you start to do new things, your need for control changes. And sometimes it changes in an increasing manner. Other times it changes in a decreasing manner. And it just depends on the way the world's going to change. But you can see, I mean, the thing you can see from the history of iOS 4, 5, and 6 is that we are getting ever progressively more controls. Now, there's now this big barrier that says, you want these additional controls? Okay, you've got to be in a supervised world to have them. And I think that's a really good distinction to make, because it means that institutions that are making big purchases of iPads get to have more of the controls they need, whereas they can't be used to sort of tyrannize the sole iPad user in a big organization. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, people can't just go, oh, you're using an iPad, I'm going to ruin your iPad so that you can't use it here. Whereas in a bigger organization, you say, well, okay, here's a plan structure. We need to have these controls in place for these people, and we can do this all now. And that's the distinction I kind of see coming along. Okay, so we have talked for some time about this. This may be one show, this may be two shows. We'll try and figure it out. I'll see if I can find a place to cut it. But I think that's pretty much everything I've got to say about Apple Configurator right now. It's a powerful tool. It does some unique things. It's not perfect, as we've discussed, but there are channels to get help. And it does these things that many schools have been saying to me for a couple of years now. We really, really need to have this, otherwise we can't deploy iPads. And I'm sort of like, well, now you've got it. You've got VPP now. You've got Configurator. Go for it, right? Some people still have concerns about scaling Configurator up to big numbers, and I think that's fair. I mean, it is only a 1.2. It's still quite a new application. But I think it's going to be a part of everybody's toolkit regardless of what you do in the end. So,
Just think, we either could have Configurator or we could not. And if we didn't have it, it would be harder to do what we're doing. So I'm just thankful we have it. I mean, they could have not released it. We were deploying iPads without it. It's dramatically easier with the VPP program and Apple Configurator.
Couldn't agree more.
So,
yeah. Let's leave it there.
All right.
Okay.